Blog Talk Radio.
We got an action-packed show. We got a lot to talk about tonight. You know, there's just a lot going on. And but waiting on my host to jump in, my co-host to jump in. Might be having some technical difficulties tonight.
Yo. We good?
We good. We ready to rock and roll, buddy.
Yeah, it was doing that thing again where it kicked me off the line. I don't know what was happening with that.
And that's why, you know what? Let me put a reminder on my phone to send them an email because we need to have some kind of technical support, especially during prime time. But, hey, man, what's going on, Keys? How you doing, bro? You all right? You good?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm all right. I'm good. How you doing?
Oh, man, I can't complain. Just hanging in there, bro. Hey, man, but let's go ahead and jump into it, man. We got a lot to talk about. Man, bro, big fight this weekend, dog. One of the fights, me and you, when it was announced, we were so happy. Let's go ahead and jump into it. We got so much to talk about. We got Aaron Blanchfield taking on Fiora Mannion. Is that it? Is that her name? Fiora
Mannion. Fiora.
Yeah, that's her. Yeah, man.
Sounds right to me.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull it up. My computer out of slow. Normally I have my computer up, but these are two up and coming stars. Me and you both like both of these fighters. This is what a fight night main event should be, bro. You got two up and comers on 112-1, 111-1. I want to say they're both in the top five. Yeah, let me see. Yeah, Aaron Blanchfield is number two, and Mannion Fiora is number three, bro. So, hey, what you thinking? What you thinking about this fight, bro?
Well, I'll say this. I think Mannion Fiora clearly beat Rose Namajunas which was her last fight. I thought she looked good there. I really don't think Rose looks good at 125. I didn't think she looked good in the one she just fought either. But, yeah, Mannion Fiora is a warrior. I feel like I know Aaron Blanchfield is – I would like to see Aaron Blanchfield win. But then again, I'm pretty sure – you know, a guy was talking on Twitter the other day, and he was saying how Blanchfield's accuracy, her takedown accuracy, I think is like 36% or something like that, which – Mannion Fiora's takedown defense is like 80-90%, you know, and so it's really going to come down to, I mean, obviously they haven't fought each other, so it doesn't always mean, you know, it that's not the whole picture, but it's going to be a good fight. If Fiora can, I think if it's a striking fight, it leans towards Fiora, and where she's almost a 2-point underdog, which is kind of crazy because. If she can make it her fight, I think she wins the fight. But if Blanchfield can make it her fight, I think she wins the fight. So I'm surprised the way the odds are.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the odds. We got Blanchfield as a minus 190 and Fiora as a plus 160. I thought this fight would be more close to a pick-em than anything. But you said Aaron Blanchfield's takedown accuracy is 36%. Fiora takedown accuracy is 46%, bro. So this fight is going to – whoever can switch up their game plan, I think is going to win this fight. You know how me used to say, sometimes in a fight you got to come in with at least three game plans? I think this is one of those fights where the lady's going to have to come in with more than one game plan. I think both of them can wrestle off their back. Both of them can wrestle. So they can get taken down and get back up. I think they both can scramble. So whoever, like you said, can win the stand-up battle is going to win this fight. But when they get taken down, they need to be going for submissions. You got to make your opponent think when you take them down. You just can't take them down and have them, like, thinking, all right, I'm going to get back onto my feet. They really ain't doing nothing. You got to have your opponent thinking that, okay, if I do this move, it might take my back. I can't do this because then it might get mount. I think both of these ladies' ground games are so good that once one of them is down, you'll see the wheels turning. But it's going to end up being whoever can deliver the most strikes, have a head movement and all that good stuff. But I like this fight, man. And if I had to pick, well, I'll have to pick. Man, I really like Aaron Blanchfield, man. I really do. I'm going to take Aaron Blanchfield, man. I think she wins a split decision. I don't think either one of them can knock the other one out. And I think both of them were so good on the mat that I don't think that I think that would be the best way somebody would finish somebody by submission, but I just don't see it happening. But, yeah, man, I'm going to take Aaron Blanchfield, man, split decision, dog, and a barn burner of a fight.
Yeah. I think I'll go with Fiero. I think Fiero is a solid underdog this week. I think that's a very good underdog. People talk about value plays, like, but they put value on the wrong types of people. You know, it's like, you know, guys on just to say for betting Twitter, it's like, you know, you see guys calling Cedric Dumas, who's the fighter that looks like 21 Savage. You know, they're saying that he's value. It's like, he's not value just because he's plus money. Value to me is a great underdog. That's somebody who is an underdog but maybe could have the minus tag. That's value. So I don't get, like, when guys say stuff like that, because it's like Cedric Dumas, you know, I heard Cedric Dumas is, you know, in and out of court. He just caught a felony like a month ago or something, 2 months ago. So I don't know how focused he is on the fight game. And he's not that great of a fighter either. You know, he can fight, but he's not, you know, he's not nothing special. And kind of seems like he has other stuff going on. But either way, people calling that a value play. That is not a value play. Manon Farrow is a value play. That might be the best underdog on the card. I think, you know, Joaquin Buckley is a value play. You know, even though that one actually did move to a pick'em, if you look at it. Him and Vicente Luque, that one is pretty much out of pick'em now, which that's fine. But, he, you know, in all his fights, he's usually valued. But my whole thing is, I'll quote Manon Fiero. I think it ends up being a striking fight, and I think I think she has the better hands. I think, you know, that'll be an underdog upset for that one. But I want to see Blanchfield win. So, hey, either way, I'll either be right or I'll have got what I wanted.
So it's a win-win. Yeah, because I see the Vicente Luque is minus 120 and Joaquin Buckley is here plus 100. So basically, by the time they walk into the cage or the day of the – probably after the weigh-ins, it'll probably be an even pick 'em. So, yeah, man. But you know, I was definitely looking forward to seeing these two young ladies fight. This is definitely a great matchup, a great UFC Fight Night main event. But you know, me and you was talking this weekend, and we was talking about the Dugarian fight and the Rose Namajunas fight. As far as, like, takedowns and, you know, advancing your position, going for submissions. And, you know, it got me to thinking, man. I think I think takedowns and I think they're overrated in a fight, man. If a fighter really isn't doing anything with the position, you know, I think it's a good strategy when you have a great wrestler who can wrestle somebody, dominate them, but at the same time, they're advancing their position, they're throwing strikes, they're throwing elbows. But when you just got what me and you like to say, man humping or girl humping, you shouldn't win a fight just because you can hold somebody down. I think another thing I was actually thinking about it, and I'm gonna ask you about this. I think also another thing is, depending on who we want to win, you know, because I was thinking, I wanted Rose to win, but when I was watching the fight, was I really watching the fight? So when I went back and I watched the fight, she really wasn't doing much, man. She really wasn't doing much. She didn't look good. I didn't think Reboss looked good either. I think she looked good in the first round, part early in the second. But, you know, she came in the fifth round. She looked okay. But that was because she knew she was down. But when I rewatched it, I was like, I don't like this. I don't like this wrestling thing when you're not doing nothing. What's your take on it, bro?
I would say this, is that I think that – well, I agree with what you're saying there. I think that I think we as fans, and this is me included, I'm not trying to say, oh, they do this and I don't do that. Like, I would say I try not to do this. You know, I mean, I may do this here and there. You might even say in this example I did this, but I also feel like other people did this. So this is the thing. So I think most of us would agree on what you just said. Some people might not if they're more into the wrestling and grappling. Maybe they, you know, they're Khabib fans. They like that kind of stuff. But I think most of us would agree. But the thing is that I think when it comes down to, like, fighters that we like, I feel like we just, because of our natural bias, we tend to lean towards the fighters that we're a fan of, and we'll kind of, I think a lot of us, we will, you know, value certain types of things in the cage more than when the more, you'll put more value on a fighter you like when they do a certain thing versus the value you put on a fighter that you don't really like when they do the same thing. So, and the example I'm going to make is this. So people told me that, you know, I only felt like Isaac Dalgarian the previous week. I'm pretty sure you said you watched the Isaac Dalgarian versus Christian Rodriguez fight, the fight card before the Rose and Hibas fight was the weekend before. And so people told me that, you know, I was only like making a case for Dalgarian because like I had a bet on him. First of all, I didn't have any bets on that fight. That's a fact. I had no bets on that fight, so that's just incorrect. I had that is not the reason. I had no stake in that fight at all. I was literally just watching it. That was one that, if you want to know, when I looked through it, I actually skipped that one because I was like, nah, like I'm not really feeling a bet on that one. You know, I do that a lot. I get the kind of an intuition thing. I'm like, okay, I don't want to do it, and I'm glad that I didn't. Look at the way that it went, and then we're all debating the decision. I'm glad that I didn't put a bet on that fight. My God. You know, and a lot of people were taking Isaac Dalgarian's money line that week. He was, you know, one of the most talked about guys, and I just had that feeling. I was like, you know what, I'm staying out of this one, and looks like I was right to do that because we got, you know, a very controversial decision. Some people thought one thing, some people thought another. But what I'll say is that, with that being said, I think Dalgarian won rounds 1 and 2 of that fight, clear as day. I had no doubt in my mind. I actually thought that those were both 10-8 rounds. I had those both 10-8. I don't know how people didn't see that. That were very dominant rounds. Like and so where I had it 20-16 going into round 3, and then Christian Rodriguez obviously won round 3. I don't think anyone's debating if he won round 3. I think my question to the people who think Christian Rodriguez fair and square won that fight is, which round, either one or two, did you give to him? Like, that's the part that puzzles me, because we're talking about a round-based scoring, okay, where each round is scored, and that's how you add up the tally and you come to the final number, is by going round for round. So I'm just confused on which round people gave to him, because I didn't see him even in either of those rounds. I didn't see it. People talking about he had, you know, the striking in those rounds. I didn't see it. There was no time for any striking because he was getting dominated. And what I'm trying to point out here is this. Maybe I need to watch both fights back for a second time. I only watched the Dalgarian and Christian Rodriguez fight and then the Rose T-Boss fight. I only watched them both live. I've not watched them back like you did. I give you credit for having done that. That was a good call, and it looks like you have a semi different opinion on the second watch. You see it a different way. What I'm trying to get to is that I think Dalgarian, the fact that there's people saying that, I'm just confused on how people valued like the Rose control time over the Dalgarian control time. Like I'm lost as to like what. Like so Dalgarian was the way I saw it was like this. You don't want to give some guy a round because he just can hold somebody down, right? But the part where I think you can win off that is when you having the control of the fight and control of the positions becomes the majority of the round. I feel like that's when you won the round, because what else are we going to – like, I don't think it's fair to say that, oh, you know, Joe Smith, you know, had five significant strikes, but then this guy had, you know, 4 minutes of control out of the five-minute round. Like, I don't think that makes sense to say that five significant strikes overrules 4 minutes of control time. Like, I just don't think that makes sense. It's like, okay – I don't think we should rule that heavier than if the guy had, like, you know, 30 significant strikes. You're talking 20, 30 significant strikes, and we saw him land a couple of those where it were big shots. Yeah, I think that's when you're having a different conversation. That's when it can overrule the control. But when you're talking about the control itself made up the majority of the rounds, like I saw Dalgarian do in rounds one and two, that's when I get confused over people trying to argue, oh, well, you know, Christian Rodriguez was winning in the striking. I'm like, where was the striking? There was barely any striking in those rounds. Like, there was no chance to be striking because he was getting dominated on the mat the whole time. That was – rounds one and two was pretty much a grappling match. So I just don't understand where people come in with, like, oh, with the striking thing. It's like, bro, find me the striking in those rounds. I don't recall even seeing it. But – I don't know. I was really confused with the Rose. You know, I saw the same people arguing that Rose's control time won her the minutes versus He-Boss, even though He-Boss, I feel like, looks good in the striking every round. She had moments every round. So where are those people with saying, you know, there's no consistency of it. It just seems like and that's where it comes in with, you know, fans having their bias towards their fighter. I feel like Rose is a more liked fighter, and Dalgarian's a newer fighter who, you know, maybe some people are fans. He doesn't have as many fans, so I feel like if he does the same thing as Rose, he's not going to get the same opinions from people as Rose will get. I'm not saying, I mean, Rose versus He-Boss, I don't even think I was scoring the rounds. Like, I don't think I really cared to, like, score it. I don't recall what my score was, so I probably wasn't scoring it. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think Rose looked, like, much better than He-Boss in that fight.
Yeah, man. Actually, I went back and I looked up the scorecards for Christian Rodriguez versus Isaac Dugarian, and you are going to be shocked. First round, all three judges scored it 10-8 for Dugarian. Second round, one judge scored it 10-9, Rodriguez. One judge scored it 10-9, Dugarian. Another judge scored it 10-9, Rodriguez. Now, this is going to be the killer. Round three, all three judges scored it 10-8, Rodriguez. Now, I'm trying to play that fight. I'm trying to play that third round back. He did have Dugarian hurt. He was a more aggressive fighter. Think that warranted a 10-8. But that's how they scored it, bro. They gave Rodriguez a 10-8 in the third round, all three judges. So, but yeah, man, I'm with you, man. You know, I think for Rose's sake, as far as me, when I was watching the fight, I thought her jab was more effective. I thought Ebos was fighting that distance. She was closing the distance, but she really wasn't doing much. And then her corner kept telling her, you know, she kept going for that spinning stuff, which I was like, that ain't going to work. You know, I think she let it one spinning. She let a spinning kick to the body maybe like twice, three times at the most. And I think she landed one spinning back punch, and I think that was in the first round. But I just didn't like her game plan in that fight. It seemed like they were just going with the flow of the fight, and I think she could have been more dominant. And Rose, I don't think she can make strawweight anymore, Keys. I think that's why she's fighting at 125. I don't think she can make strawweight anymore. We talked about this years ago, is that fighters are fighting more closer at their walk around rate. And I think that's what she at this part of her career. But man, you brought up something interesting today, and I just want to jump to it. You sent me a text message saying that Dana White wants Aspinall to defend the interim heavyweight title. Keys, please tell me this ain't true. That we're defending a belt that you not even recognize as the champion. You are basically in a holding pattern until you fight John Jones or the winner, John Jones, Stipe. How you feel about Aspinall defending the interim heavyweight belt, man?
It's tough because, like, obviously I don't like it, but and Dana White did say that. I was watching a clip from, I don't know who he was being interviewed by, but they were asking him about, like, going to the UK, and Dana White said, you know, we have an England pay-per-view plan for the summer. He's like, we do have, you know, two English champions now, and he pretty much insinuated that they would both be on the card. So, obviously I don't like it, but I don't know how else they would proceed. It's like, I think it was their fault in the first place for even creating an interim belt. I think that's kind of what it goes back to, because there's only two things you could do to fix that, right? I don't like it, but I also want to see Tom Aspinall fight, and I think there's only two ways to go about making it make sense, right? Because you can't, and I know that you, you're like pro, you're on the side of like, let's wait and let Jones fight Stipe for the heavyweight title. You know, like, you're on the side of that. I'm more on the side of, you know, let's drop the belt and have Jones, he can come back and fight for it. You know, I'm more on that side because I just think, you know, it's just bullshit. It's like, John Jones took 3 years to get ready for heavyweight. Then he comes back, does one fight where I don't even think he absorbed one strike. And then now, you know, we have to wait like a year and a half while he sits on the heavyweight title. I understand he's John Jones, but I just think that's bullshit, to be honest.
But he got hurt, though.
Yeah, but it's just a lot of waiting, bro. It's a lot of waiting. And so what I'm trying to tell you, though, is that it's hard to, like, take that stance and also say that, like, Aspinall shouldn't defend the interim belt, because that's the interim belt was a byproduct of that stance. Like, because people didn't want to see it go that way, now we ended up with like, this fraud interim belt that should have never been made. But the only reason it was even made was because we had to wait for the heavyweight title fight. So one thing is a byproduct of the other. So it's tough to, like, want it. You get to a you become stuck in a rock and a hard place when you want to wait to have Jones sit on the belt for years and then fight Stipe, but then you also don't want Aspinall to defend an interim title, which is a byproduct of the first card. You know,
yeah.
So it's difficult to have both stances. But the only thing that they probably there was two solutions. There was either one, I already just said it, and nobody seems to like that, which would be Jones releases the belt, let Aspinall fight for it, and then come back. People don't like that, so that's fine. And then the number two option would be, you just get the interim belt out of the picture. We can't go back. So I can't say, oh, it would have been better if they didn't make an interim title in the first place. Can't go back. So since it already happened, what you would do now is you just don't put the interim title on the line. Like, Aspinall is the number one contender. Let's get the interim title out of the picture. Let's get rid of the title talk, and let's just say, okay, Aspinall is the number one contender. Let's just put the interim belt aside. You know, if you want to have him with the title, you know, at the press conference, I mean, that's fine. But let's not say, oh, this is an interim title fight when he fights whoever he fights. Let's just say it's Aspinall versus that person. That would be the solution.
Yeah, I totally agree. Because let's say if Aspinall goes in and he loses, that person is now the interim heavyweight champion of the world. That doesn't even sound right. But I'm with you, man. Everybody know I'm a John Jones fan. I think the best thing for John to do right now is drop the belt. Let Aspinall be recognized as the champion. Go fight your fight with Stipe, which I think is going to be his last fight anyway. Because I think it would be definitely messed up if he fights Stipe, wins, and then retires. Basically, he held up the heavyweight division for, 2 years? And actually, a part of me think that's what's going to happen anyway. I just don't see him looking at Aspinall as somebody he has to fight. I think it's only two guys that he want to fight. One of them is Stipe, the other one is Francis. That's it. I just don't see him being interested in the Aspinall fight. But I know what I'm going to say is going to sound kind of crazy, but I think if the UFC had a better working relationship with John Jones, and if they was just like sit down with him and explain it to him like the way I just did, I think John would do it. Because if you really care about the UFC the way you say you do, then he would do that. But he has so much bad dealings with the UFC. I know if they asked him to do that, he wouldn't do it just because. But this is one of the things that I wish he had a better working relationship with Dana White. Because I think if it was any other fighter, a DC, a Stipe, a Holloway, a Poirier, I think he could go to them and be like, hey, look, you got hurt. I know you want to have this legacy fight, but, hey, for the sake of the division, I need you to go ahead and drop the belt. We'll move forward. If you beat Stipe and you want to fight the interim champion or the current champion at that time, we'll just move you up. But he just got so much bad blood, I just don't see him doing it, man. And that's sad. That's sad to me. I came across an interesting question. Well, actually, it wasn't interesting. It wasn't a question. Last week, we was going to talk about this, but we didn't get to it. Conor McGregor tweeted out that he will be fighting this summer. We are only in March, so summer starts June 21st. Keith, you are a Conor fan. Will we see Izzy in the cage this summer, or will we see Conor in the cage this summer? Who do you think we see first? Or neither.
I mean, I'll say this. I'll give a three-part thing. I'll give a three-part thing, and it's very short. First, my first answer is neither, because I just don't. Neither one is he. You know, he came off the loss. He's coming off. You know, I can understand him taking a chunk of time off. I mean, that was September, so like it's been. And by the time he would fight, you know, he would have taken almost a year off. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, his coach said that they were offered a fight and that they are training. So maybe there's one that's already set up for the summer. I don't know about, but I mean, I think my first answer would be neither. I don't believe what Conor says until I actually see it happen. You know, he likes to keep himself in the spotlight. We know that. So I don't believe it until I see it. And then Izzy, I'm not even hearing rumors of an Izzy fight. So I say neither. But if I had to pick one or the other, I'd go Izzy actually fighting the summer over McGregor, for sure.
I'm with you. I want to say neither. But being that, you know, I kind of came up with the question, I'm gonna pick one. I'm gonna go with Izzy, man. I think Izzy might fight Duplessis, man. I think Duplessis might be fighting Izzy probably towards the end of the summer. But once again, Izzy hasn't said anything about returning, or he hasn't gave us a return date. Actually, he's been kind of really quiet on social media here lately. He normally tweets throughout the fights, you know, his tweets during the fights, you know, giving us his opinion. But as far as his own situation, he hasn't said anything. Whereas Conor said he's going to fight this summer. One thing about the UFC, whenever Conor McGregor fights, you know they are going to publicize it, market it to like no other. So, I don't know what's going on with the UFC and Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler, because they did the Ultimate Fighter. Normally when you do the Ultimate Fighter, normally a fight is set up. I don't know whether – I think Conor was medically cleared. But then he was filming his movie, Roadhouse, which me and Key's going to get to a little bit later. But I love, and you know I take great pleasure in this, Key's. I love how he gets his fan base riled up. Nobody gets their fan base riled up like him except Donald Trump. But it's like, as soon as he said that, as soon as he tweeted that out, man, it was so many likes, responses. And I was thinking, like, man, why does his fans keep falling for this trick? Why they keep falling for this? And it's because it's Conor McGregor, man. He's a star. You know, he brought a lot of people to the UFC because, you know, he shot to the top. And then he fought Floyd Mayweather. And now he in movies and stuff, so I get it. But I want to say neither, but if you hold my feet to the fire, I'm going to say Izzy. But do I want to see Chandler and Conor? I think it'll be an epic first round. But like me and Key say, Chandler just isn't good at his fights after the first round. I don't know why that is. It's probably because he's balls to the wall in the first round. And he probably – I don't get it. I don't get how a guy go from being a stud fighter in the first round and be a super dud for the remainder of the fight. So, but we shall see what happens, bro.
Yeah, I mean, people are saying a lot of that, and Yeah, I mean, I don't believe it till I see it that it's actually locked in, and I mean, to say what could be if they actually do fight, I would say, I think Michael Chandler will beat Conor's easiest fight of his career. I do. I think that is probably his easiest fight. I mean, you. When I look at that matchup, I look at a guy that is the perfect style to get knocked out by Conor McGregor.
Yep.
Like, and I don't understand how anybody is saying that. Like I just think people are going off of, you know, his inactivity and you know the leg break. I think people forget this one thing: when you put aside the fact that you hate the guy, and you look at the third fight with Poirier. Tell me that he didn't look great in that fight until that happened. I thought he looked great in the fight. And people just, they see that Michael Chandler, what he has done recently, which, I mean, if you really want to go into specifics, he knocked out, you know, the ghost of Tony Ferguson, which, I mean.
He got lucky.
Yeah, and he was losing that fight.
Yeah.
And he was losing that fight. I thought Tony was piecing him up in the first round. I was excited, you know. But I have to say the ghost of Tony Ferguson because we're talking about not the same Tony Ferguson, you know, from you know, pre-2020. You know, we're not talking about the same Tony. You know, it's like I even thought 2019 Tony was dangerous, you know. Even 2019 Tony was hella dangerous. I was like, this guy is scary. You know what I mean? Like, he's still bloodying up everybody. It's like, even though he's hittable, you know, and he's not doing, like, you know, the most incredible stuff, like, but he was still dangerous. Like, 2018, 2019, 2017 Tony was fun, man. It was still, you know, so it's just, we're talking about a different Tony. But like I said, I thought he was piecing Chandler up in that first round, and then he got knocked out in the second round. And then what else, you know, Chandler beat Dan Hooker. It's like, okay, Conor would KO Dan Hooker as well. And Conor would also KO that Tony Ferguson. You know, I think so. So, you know, Chandler hasn't done anything recently that Conor couldn't do, in my opinion. Chandler got choked out by Poirier. Like, I told people that Poirier would beat him. I mean, I think we both said that. I think many people said that, but. But even at that time, people didn't believe Poirier could beat him, and I'm like, Poirier is gonna finish this dude, and I'm a fan of Chandler. But Poirier is gonna finish him, and he did. And versus Gaethje, Chandler came with one round, like you said, came with one round, and he was non-existent in rounds two and three. And that's the reality of the guy. That is Chandler. That's what he does. Comes with one round, okay? He came with one round versus Oliveira as well. I'm pretty sure Oliveira finished him in the second round, ironically. Right when he got tired, it was Oliveira's fight, and then Oliveira quickly finished him. Oliveira literally TKO'd him. It's like, you think Conor McGregor can't do that? Like, that's where I get frustrated because, like, I know it's just people's hate for the guy. I understand why you feel that way. I get it. I'm not trying to justify a lot of the bullshit that Conor McGregor does. I'm just telling you that when you look back at the fighter, let's not do all this revisionist history stuff and then also try to paint it like Michael Chandler is this, like, extremely dangerous fighter. He's not. Like, he comes with 5 minutes of work. If you can survive the 5 minutes, or if you're a great counter striker like Conor McGregor, who will capitalize versus somebody who likes to explode at him like that, you know, or you just get through those 5 minutes, you're going to beat him. It's like, I just don't understand why people are trying to paint it as if, like, you know, McGregor's in trouble here. It's like, this is going to be his easiest fight. This is going to be his easiest fight. And, like, people are going to feel so stupid when McGregor – when the fight's over in the first round, people are going to say, wow, you know, you guys really propped up Michael Chandler as a guy that could beat McGregor. Yeah, I know they propped him up. I know they did. I didn't do it. You know, Lee Kiesler thought, we told you that that was going to be an easy fight. We told you that that was all smoke and mirrors. When they look back, I'm gonna say, yep, that's exactly how we said it would go. I'm, you know, staying here as long as you like.
I still think his easiest fight was Dennis Seaver. I didn't think Dennis Seaver had no chance of winning that fight. Going into it was definitely a match made in heaven for Conor. So I think Dennis Seaver will always go down as his easiest fight. But speaking of Conor, Keith, I don't know how much time you got on your hands, but I'm going to watch Roadhouse, man. I'm going to watch Roadhouse this weekend with Jake Gyllenhaal and Conor McGregor in it. And I want to see I watched the original Roadhouse, which was an excellent movie with Patrick Swayze in it. Definitely a great movie. Probably had one of the best love scenes ever in the movie also. Just throwing that out there in the original movie. But, you know, they remaking it. Conor McGregor, I guess he's the bad guy in the movie. Jake Gyllenhaal is the good guy. And I'm going to give it a watch. And next week's show, I'll be giving Conor McGregor a grade, you know, as far as what I thought of his performance. I'll be giving the movie a grade, what I thought about it overall. And hopefully you can watch it, Keys, and we can both, you know, talk about it next week.
Yeah, my dad was telling me that he was queuing up the movie the other day. I'm pretty sure my dad watched it, and my aunt was raving about it to me. My aunt and uncle watched it, and she said it was awesome. So, and then some people online, I mean, like the MMA guru was like trashing the movie, and of course, like a lot of people are hating on it on Twitter. But it's like MMA Twitter is a very miserable place, man. I mean, let's keep it 1,000. Let's keep it a stack. It's a very miserable place. You know, you could tell these are a lot of people that you don't get all that much positivity from them because, you know, I won't even go too much deeper into it. But, yeah, you get I'm looking forward to watching the movie, and you give me your view on it, and I'll probably end up watching it before next week's show as well. But if I don't and you do, then, yeah, then and if you end up watching it and I don't, either way, the people will get a review. You know, I'll get a review, and I'll need your review of the movie.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people just, you know, it's Conor McGregor is a polarizing guy, and people, Conor McGregor is the Floyd Mayweather of MMA. Some people watch the fight to see him lose. Some people watch the fight to see him win. So it's like depending on what side of the fence you're on, that's how people are 9 times out of 10 going to watch the movie. If they go in with a preconceived notion that they don't like Conor McGregor, they're going to automatically say that the movie sucked because they don't want to give him any kind of credit. I'm not a fan of Conor McGregor, but I am a fan of good movies. Me and Keys, probably one of the few people you'll ever talk to that think Skull Island was a overall great movie. The story was good. The action was good. They weren't too over the top with the special effects. And the King Kong fight scenes were awesome. And that's one of the movies that me and Keys both agree on is a great movie. So I'm going to go into it, and I'm going to watch it because I like Jake Gyllenhaal, and I like the original. So I'm going to give it an honest take. If I like it, I like it. If I don't, I don't. And I'll let y'all know why I don't like it, and I'll let you know why I do like it. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to watching that this weekend, bro.
Yeah, and there was something that you just said that I wanted to – oh, yeah, yeah. So this one piece I want to just give y'all right now, and then I want to get to one more thing I wanted to ask you, and then, you know, before we get off. But the – Kong Skull Island is the best movie of all those movies. I feel that way very strongly. You know, that is the best one of those movies. I was just talking about this one of my boys last night, so it's funny that you made that comparison. And it's also funny you made that comparison because the new movie comes out this Friday, the Kong and Godzilla, the New Empire movie. And I can't wait to see that. So by the time the next show comes, I'll tell you, you will most likely have two movie reviews. You will likely have a Roadhouse movie review from Lee, and you will likely have, you will definitely have a Kong and Godzilla, the New Empire review from me, and possibly a Roadhouse review from me, but I will definitely say you will have a Kong Godzilla New Empire review from me, and I do think you have a Roadhouse review from Lee. So that's one thing. And just to tell you, if you haven't seen any of those movies, just watch Kong Skull Island, and then you can honestly just skip right to the new movie, in my opinion. If you want to really do it, you can do this. You can watch Kong Skull Island, and then you can go watch Kong vs. Godzilla, and then just go to the new movie. That's how I would probably say, because then at least you could see Godzilla in a movie before you watch that one, because he was, he was really cool in that movie. I personally rate the Kong vs. Godzilla a 6 out of 10, and I personally rate Kong Skull Island a 10 out of 10. I think that's a perfect movie. I think Samuel Jackson was great in that movie. There's a lot of other actors that were in that movie, kind of low-key, that I don't know their names, but, like, guys that I recognize them from other movies. And I'm like, yo, these are all good actors, man. I'm like, I don't know either name, but I like this cast. You know, I just think there was a nice cast of characters in there. And I don't know, the whole thing, like you said, all the pieces were there. I think it's a 10 out of 10 movie. So that's how that's going to be.
They had Samuel Jackson, they had Brie Larson, who was Captain Marvel. They had John C. Reilly, who was the army guy that got stranded there. He was he played in Talladega Nights with my man Will Ferrell. John Goodman was in it. You had the guy that played Dr. Dre in NWA. And I don't know Tom Hiddleston, but I know he played in a movie that I watched before. I'm trying to see what movie it was that he played in, but he did play in a movie that I've seen before. But, yeah, he was actually pretty good. I want to say he played low-key. Yeah, he played low-key in Captain America. Yeah, and Thor, I'm sorry. He played Thor. Yep, he played Thor. So, yeah, they had an awesome crack cast in Kong stuff for Skull Island, man. But, the Godzilla vs. Kong movie, I probably gave it a 7 because I'm a Godzilla fan. I've been a Godzilla fan since I was a little kid. I thought the story was good. I just thought the execution of the story wasn't. You could just tell how it was going to end up, you know, Kong and Godzilla, you know, teaming up to take down the mechanical Godzilla. But, you know, I think the way we got to the underworld and all that was great. But, all right, man, Key's going to see Kong Godzilla 2 this weekend. Okay. All right, Key's. We normally don't do this, but I think we have to today. Man, we got to give a shout-out to Corey Anderson, man. Me and you love Corey Anderson when he was in the UFC. We thought that he should have got a shot at the 205 belt. But, you know, he up and up left and went to Bellator. And over the weekend, he won the Bellator light heavyweight belt, man. I just wanted to give a shout-out to Corey Anderson, man. I tweeted that out. He liked the tweet. You know, long time coming for Corey. What you think, man? Corey Anderson finally a champion, bro.
Yeah, I appreciate seeing that. You know, I'm glad you reminded me of how I was a fan of him when he was in the UFC, because I definitely, since he left the UFC, he put a bad taste in my mouth with the way that he just always taking shots at the UFC, like, since he's been in Bellator. And yeah, you know, I don't really like that kind of thing when they stop playing that role. So I'm glad you reminded me, because it almost seemed like so far away, you know, because his more recent stuff, I just haven't liked the way that you know, a lot of the things that he said. But it just seems like guys just right once they get out the UFC, they just like they can't just like go make their own legacy. You know, they have to like tie it back to the UFC and like take shots all the time. So I don't appreciate that type of stuff. But overall, yeah, it's dope to see him, you know, become a world champion. You know, I would have liked to see him fight for the belt in UFC, but, you know, Bellator world champion, hey, he's still a world champion, and I'm, you know, congrats to him. I'm happy to see it, you know.
Yeah, I think Cora was just one of those guys in the UFC. He would get close to getting a title shot, and then he would lose. And it's like, in the UFC, hey, once you get on that streak of winning and you getting close to the belt, you can't lose because the UFC can't justify you coming off a loss to fight for the belt. They just won't do that. 9 times out of 10, you'll never see anybody coming off a loss fight for a belt. So, but yeah, I was happy for Corey, man. Corey's one of the guys me and Keys like. We liked his style. You know, I was kind of upset that he left the UFC to go to Bellator. And then, like Key said, once he got over there, you know, he was always throwing salt at the UFC. I get it, man. You know, you're in a new organization. You know, you're trying to put some light on them. But, bro, everybody knows Bellator is the B-League, dog. So, I don't need to throw salt at the UFC. What you should have been doing was bigging up the other guys at Bellator. You put a light on the guys that's in your division. That, hey, instead of me fighting guys over there, hey, I'm fighting this guy. And that's how you're supposed to do that. But everybody ain't humble. Everybody don't show grace. But congratulations to Corey Anderson, man, for winning. And to close the show out, man, we got a sad story, man, about one of the guys me and Keys really like. I actually got a chance to interview this guy, man. And it's just sad the way his career has definitely taken a stumble. Walt Harris, man, been suspended 4 years, you know, for PED. And just to go back a little bit, I interviewed Walt for the scrap. You know, me and him talked for about an hour. It was a good interview. And then maybe 6 weeks to 2 months later, his daughter was murdered. And, you know, his career kind of came to a standstill. And then he came back. And now he has this, man. 4 years, you know, at first, when I first saw it, I was like, man, that's a long time. But then when I read the story, I sent the story to Keys. I was like, man, I see why they gave him 4 years. He was basically habitual. Yeah, Keys, what's your thoughts on Walt Harris, man? Basically, I think his career is over, bro, due to this suspension. Unless he can get a favorable appeal, but I just don't see that happening.
I mean, I'm disappointed. It's disappointing to see that. I mean, not even just disappointed to him, but like just, it just sucks to see that, you know, it's like, cause you know, at his age and at this point in his career, it's like, you know, it 4 years suspension. It's like, damn, like that's a chunk of time, man. That's a chunk of life. Like to lose 4 years, you know, from, you know, I don't know, like what else he has going on, if he works too. I mean, I know a lot of fighters that have other things they do, but I mean, that's tough, especially if you had like hopes to, you know, try to climb the rankings or, you know, if you wanted to become a world champion. I don't really know like where his mind was at with that, but I mean, I know there was a time where, you know, many of us felt like Walt Harris was a prospect in the heavyweight division, and now it's just like, damn, like 40 years of age, 4 year suspension. I mean, that's tough to receive at that point. That's really tough. So I don't know. I mean, maybe he, you know, probably at this point, like I would like to see him probably like go, you know, take his talents elsewhere. You know, it's like, if you're going to be suspended here, you know, go get some fights in over there. You know, it's like, because by the time you come back, bro, it's like 44 in the UFC. I mean, that's pretty old in the UFC, man. I don't even know if there's anybody that old in the UFC right now. I mean, I know, what's the guy? What's the dude with the long hair? I think he's up there in age. Clay Guida's
up, yeah.
I think he might be around that age, but he's like a specimen, though. That guy's not everybody's gonna look like him at that age.
Guys, Randy and Devil.
You know what I mean? Like you know what I'm saying? Like Clay Guida, you know, like I said, he's a specimen. It's like, what's his age? He's 42. Clay Guida. Yeah, Clay Guida's 42. He'll be 43 in December. So he's, you know what I mean? He's a little bit older than Walt. So and Clay Guida, I still think he can go, man. That guy, you know, you probably wouldn't know he was 42 unless somebody told you.
He is constantly moving, dipping and dodging, head movement. Yeah, Clay Guida is a robot, man. But when I had sent Keith the story about Walt, at first, you know, I felt bad. But then when I started reading, it was like, so they collected samples on June 24th, July 12th, and then again in August. And all those tests came back positive. And it's like, damn. You know, it wasn't like, you know, they took the one on June 24th and, you know, one of the things was out of his system. Nah, they were still there. And then for the one they collected on the 6th, it had the first two things, drostanolone and exogenous testosterone, that was in the 24th and the 12th. And then on August 6th, it had estrazole as well as metabites for something else, bro. It was like, damn, Walt, bro. I mean, are you trying to get caught? So, you know, there's no place for cheating in the UFC, man. Especially when you're getting in there fighting with 4-ounce gloves. Man, you could hurt your opponent, possibly even kill your opponent. You know, with you just even having, you know, any sort of an advantage. And yeah, man, Keith, I think his career over with. I don't even think he'll be able to fight in another organization, because his case was done by the new doping committee, the Combat Sports Anti-Doping, which is the UFC's new anti-doping program, you know, since they got rid of USADA. So I don't know, bro. I don't know if he could go do bare knuckle. Maybe he could do some kind of grappling, but I think it's over, man. And if it's over, Walt, man, take care of yourself, man. Hopefully you got something else to fall back on to take care of your family. Lee and Keys, sending out to keep your head up, bro. Keys, man, we covered a lot tonight, man. We covered Fiore versus Blanchfield. We talked about takedowns and, you know, and wrestling. Is it overrated in fights? We talked about Aspinall defending the interim title. Who's going to fight first this summer, Conor or Izzy? I said I'm going to watch the new Conor McGregor movie. You said you're going to watch the new Khan movie. We shouted out Corey Anderson, and we talked about Walt Harris, man. We definitely had a loaded potato show tonight. Any last words, bro?
Nah, you know, I think that they were good. I have one more thing I wanted to get, but I'm just going to kick it to next week because it's really not a big deal. Yeah, we good. Everybody just stay positive. Keep going. You know, don't go too under your calories. It's not good for you. I mean, make sure you get the macros in. You know, get some exercise. Get some sun, especially since we're coming back around for that time. Yeah, that's all I got. Thank y'all for listening.
Yeah, next week, WrestleMania weekend. So we'll definitely have some wrestling talk next week. Like I said, we got movie reviews coming next week. We'll definitely review at least the main event and the co-main event from this weekend's card for the UFC. That being said, everybody take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Leah Keys, as always, we always sign out with a peace.